5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to part two of our interview with Brett Wright about reaching out to the dead. And with that, in trying to figure out, is there something going on there? Did he come to a conclusion? Did he dig deeper?
No, he never did. He was quite comfortable and quite at peace in himself that, okay, there's something going on here that I don't understand. I don't know 100% that he wanted to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Like he said, he never got a feeling. He's still in that building. He still works in that same office block. He said he's never had a feeling of fear about it. It's just something that is there, and from time to time he has an experience with. And he's never looked any deeper into it. He did tell me once that he thought about looking more into it, but you know, being a lawyer and running a very busy practice, it's not on his priority list. So no, he's never gone any further.
Sure.
With it. Not at this stage anyway.
Well, and it's understandable too, when you talk to individuals and when you started to dig into this, what sort of pushback did you get? I mean, because you're talking about folks who, if their identities were to come out as far as who's telling these stories, it could hurt them with some of the general public and their conceived notions on what this topic is, on the paranormal. Some just blow it off as, if you believe in it, you're crazy, is what some may think. Was it difficult to get some of these stories out of individuals?
No, look, it really wasn't, Tony, because I never went looking for the stories as such. I put it out there. When I decided that I was going to look at the idea of writing a book about this, I put it out there that, you know, this is what I'm doing, and if people want to come forward and talk to me, that's fine, but I never chased anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I never pursued anybody. Some people would mention, look, I had this experience, but I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to go into a book. I don't want to go any further. I'm just telling you.
Mm-hmm.
I never chased that because, you know, I respect people's privacy. And
sure.
Like you say, you know, we have people who believe in the next life. We have people who want to ridicule the next life. And that's fine because everyone is entitled to their own opinion. But I never wanted to, you know, make anyone feel pressured to go public, basically, with their story.
Sure.
But people, you know, police officers and doctors, lawyers, these sorts of people, I don't put all of their name in. And some people said, look, I'm happy to put my story to go in, but I don't want my name in. So I would put a name, or I'd make up a name, but I would put that in the story. This isn't the person's name, this is an alias.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, you know, people in professional life, you know, it can lead to ridicule, it can lead to you know, unpleasant work experiences for themselves later on. So,
sure.
But most people were quite fine. A lot of people, especially some of the police officers, said, no, you can use my whole name. I've got no problem with it. All this happened to me, and I, if people believe me, that's fine. If they don't want to, that's not my concern. But having said that, I would never put an entire name into the story. I'd always use a first name and or a last name, something like that. So that's how I was more comfortable doing it, for their privacy, to respect their privacy.
And that's understandable. I mean, and I can imagine, too, for some folks with this very professional jobs and careers and an image to be concerned with, just being able to get it out, whether they're leaving their name or not, could be fairly cathartic just to be able to be heard and not looked at as being crazy. Or I can imagine in some circles, you don't even say it, even privately, to some colleagues because of fear of what the judgment may be, even with trust friends. Let's dig
in. That's what I found. I very much found that, and people would have that that approach to it as well. But as I said, people that would come forward and tell me these stories and were happy for these stories to be published, they weren't shy about telling these stories. They weren't embarrassed. They came forward and they said, "Look, this thing happened to me, and you know, if you want to use it for your book, you use it for your book." You know, so. People were quite open about it. It wasn't like people were being secretive, if that makes sense.
Sure. Well, I think we're luckily entering a world or a space of acceptance on this topic. More accepting than it's been for the last many, many, many years. As far as being able to be open and sharing these experiences and stories with one another. Let's dig into some of the other stories that you cover in your book, whether it be with police officers, doctors, lawyers. What are some of the other ones that really stand out to you, and go into some detail on what you uncovered?
Well, another one so after I'd been my fiance passed away, I was seeing a doctor because I'd been in an accident, and so I had to go to this doctor to get basically to be past fit to go back to full duties at work as a police officer. Now, I had an appointment with this doctor one morning, and I went in, you know, and I wasn't feeling good. You know, I was still in a lot of suffering from a lot of grief, a lot of bereavement. This went on for a long time. I wasn't in a good headspace for a long time. I've gone in, and I've seen this doctor, and I wasn't really interested in making conversation, if you know what I mean. I was just going in there to get the boxes ticked and do what had to be done. But I was quite pleasant. I wasn't being surly or rude or anything like that. I was quite pleasant because that's the personality that I have. And out of the blue, this doctor said to me, he just looked up to me and he said, "So, Brett, have you had any experiences?" I sort of sat back in my chair a bit and I thought, "Well, you know, what do you mean experiences?" And he basically went on to tell me, to ask me if I had had any contact from my fiancée. And I said, "Well, again, you know, what do you mean? You make it clear what you're talking about."
Kind of an odd question for a doctor to be asking.
That's exactly right. And it wasn't something that, you know, I wasn't in a headspace to be. I wasn't ready for that question. I wasn't ready for that. You know, like so then he went on to tell me an experience that he and his wife had. He wanted to know because he wanted to know for his own interest, because he and his wife had a story where. Or an encounter where an uncle of theirs or of his had passed away some time ago. And this was an uncle who was a single man, but he would go around to all the different members of the family. He was kind of like the glue that held the family together. So he would go to this family member and talk to them and have a chat and find out what was happening in their life. Then he'd go and visit the next family member and say, "Oh yes, so, you know, Uncle John's doing this." And he was the person in the family that everyone would go to, if that makes sense. So, and he was a pipe smoker, so he smoked a pipe, and anyone who has been around a pipe smoker knows that it's a fairly pungent sort of a smell. It's a smell you don't forget. Anyway, so not long after this uncle passed away, this chap passed away, this doctor and his wife started having these strange experiences in their home, where they would be sitting in their home, and they'd be walking from, you know, the kitchen to the lounge room. And they would walk through this sudden smell of the pipe. It would just suddenly be there. And the way the doctor said it to me was that you could walk into the smell and you could walk out of it. Like if you could walk there and if you smelt the smell of the pipe, you could stop and you'd be in the smell of the pipe. But if you took a few steps further, you'd be outside the smell of the pipe. And there was no smell there. So he and his wife came to the conclusion, you know, the quite logical conclusion, that it was the uncle coming back to visit just to check on the family, because the family had meant so much to him in this life, that in the next life, wherever he is now, he still wanted to come back and see what was happening with the family. So I found that a very interesting story for the doctor to just come out and tell me that. And the way he told me that, it was like he wanted to unburden himself. Well, not unburden himself, but he wanted to pass that story on. He wanted me to know that he and his wife had this experience, that this was very real to them. So that was an interesting story to an unexpected story to hear as well.
Sure. I mean, especially when you're just going in for a checkup, you know, after an accident, and just you're expecting medical talk. You're expecting, that nature, not to go down that road. But what for you to have a doctor that is openly coming out to you and saying these things or asking these questions to you while you are, you know, sitting there and questioning this phenomena yourself, what was going through your mind? Did you find that cathartic personally?
Yeah, I did. It was quite comforting. So, you know, the stories that you hear when you're going through an experience like this yourself, the loss of a loved one, when people come forward and they can tell you stories, that it gives you a sense of comfort too, especially if you believe those stories. If those stories come across as being very believable, and you can see in the eyes and the way that the people are talking that they certainly believe what they're telling you, of course it's very comforting, because you want to be confident and happy in yourself that the people that have passed over, they've gone to the next life, that they are in a good place. That they are. It's not just finished. It's not just over. It's not just we go to sleep and we don't wake up. It's that, you know, that there is another life. That, you know, life goes on, however that works. And again, none of us are going to know exactly how that works until we go there. Whatever anyone comes up with, it's just guesswork, it's speculation, as far as I'm concerned. It's very comforting. It's very comforting when you hear other people come forward with encounters like that. That you know, are family members that have come back, you know, to check on them.
Sure.
You know? So it's quite rewarding to hear those stories.
And it's one of those things where, in some cases, when someone loses a loved one, they do get to have those experiences. The loved one does seem to be able to come back and make some sort of contact or a sign to show that they are on the other side, at least as far as the living can interpret it. In other cases, that doesn't occur at all, no matter how much we may want it to. And I don't believe that means that they're there or they're not there. I think sometimes it may just be they have the ability to or they don't have the ability to, and we don't really know why or how that comes about. It may be one of those things where just as we as living individuals, some folks are able to sing at a certain high pitch and others are not. It doesn't mean that they don't want to or they can't or they're not wanting to. It just means that it's beyond their abilities. And I think that is ringing true with the other side as well, with what abilities one would have over there. I want to ask you...
For sure, Tony. If I can just touch on that before we move on. Just look, I do touch on that in the book too, because, of course, that's the question you ask. Why do some people have experiences? Why do other people not have experiences? And some people who don't have experiences... encounters, they very much want to have an experience with a loved one who might have passed away. And through my research and through a lot of interviews, one of the things that I kind of picked up on, and again, we won't know until it's our time, but I kind of picked up on that an idea that I have about that is that if someone, say, has got an illness and they know that they're going to pass away, they can come to a peace with that, or if not a peace, certainly an understanding that this is going to happen. And my thoughts on it are that perhaps when you're in a situation like that, when you do die, there's no reason to look back, because this is an expected death. It's an, you know, I'm expecting to die and I have died and there's no reason for me to look back. Whereas if it's something like an accident, an unexpected death, that comes as a great shock to the person who has died. And perhaps people in those sort of situations, they do turn around and look back at, at this living life. So I come at it a little bit with that understanding that, if people know that they are going to die, when their time comes, they move forward. They move forward into the next life, whereas people who it's a sudden shock of a death, perhaps it takes them a little bit longer and they're more inclined to stay around and watch and see what's going on in this life. Again, I don't know, but it's just a thought process.
It is. It's all very much a thought process. As you were going through this and you were going through the grieving process and your doctor is asking you those questions about having any sort of interaction or with your fiance after she had passed, did you have any interaction? Was there any signs that she had tried to reach out to you after her passing?
Look, Tony, there are quite a lot, actually, but for the purpose of this interview, and I document some of those in the book, but it's just because it is extremely personal to me, mm-hmm. I don't really want to talk about that in an interview, if that's okay, mate.
Sure.
Because it is very, very personal, and there's obviously still a lot of, there'll always be a lot of feeling and a lot of emotion there in regards to that. So I do document some of those things in the book, but just as far as talking about it, I'd rather not go there, if that's okay, mate. Sorry about
that. No, that's fine. All I really wanted to know more so was did you have an experience or experiences yourself?
So I'm happy to answer that. Yes, yeah. I'm happy to answer that. If you want to, I know you're going to be editing this and how you're going to do it. So I'll do that now, Tony, if you like. So, yeah, no, I certainly had some experiences after my fiancée passed away, some things that I couldn't explain mm-hmm. in any other way except that she had made contact with me or was letting me know that she was around. This went on for quite a long time, actually mm-hmm. a number of years. Some of these stories, most of these stories I document in the book. And they were very rewarding. These experiences were very very personal, of course, but for me were very rewarding each time it would happen, because when you're going through that grief, that bereavement, it's a horrible thing. It's a terrible sure. thing, as anyone would know. You know, we all go through times like this at different levels, and so when I would have these experiences, they were a great source of comfort to me.
Sure. And that's all you don't have to go into any detail or anything of that nature. I just obviously with the topic of the book and kind of what led you to it, I would have to guessed or at least asked, you know, was there something there that led you to dig even deeper to find other people's experiences as well?
Oh, look, of course, mate. And, sure. and look, there are lots of stories in the book, encounters, things that I experienced mm-hmm. that I cannot explain in any other way, which are quite bizarre, but and of course I understand it's a question that you know, you should ask but just for the sake of this, I'm happy to say what I said there, but yeah. I just don't really want to go into
that's
details because it's quite emotional for me too. It kind of,
I understand. You don't need to go in any more detail. I just wanted to the yes or no. That's all.
Much appreciated. Much
sure,
appreciated.
Sure. So continuing on with when you were doing the research on this book and you were finding these stories from police officers, lawyers, doctors, and so forth, and you having your own experiences. Oftentimes, at least I find personally, when I began to dive into the world of the paranormal, I was curious about it. I had basically an acceptance of it that it existed. I didn't know a whole lot about it other than these things happen to people. And I believe that they are true for many. But as I dug deeper into it, and after doing thousands of episodes of our two programs and hearing stories from all around the world of every which shape and form and possible entity that may be interacting with the living, I end up having more questions than I do answers on the topic, which is interesting because folks will come to you go and say, oh, you're an expert on this. No, not an expert, but I'm very informed on it with the sheer number of stories. And I imagine you're more informed on it now too after doing your research and digging. What did you walk away from in terms of a mindset on the topic of the paranormal that you didn't have initially when setting out with putting this book together?
Well, I suppose the answer that I really got in the end was that, yes, I firmly believe that there is a life after this life. And I have some thoughts about how that life, how we go into that life. But what that life is, what that next realm is, I don't know. I don't understand. And anything that I think that I understand is really only a guess. But it gave me a great sense of comfort and a great sense of happiness, I suppose, that there is this whole other experience of life that awaits for all of us. And it kind of gave me the feeling that the life that we're living now is almost like an apprenticeship. It's like an introduction to what comes beyond this life. So that's what I really got out of this. I really got out of this that it's there is something else there. This is not when this life ends. That's not it. It's not just blackness and nothingness after that. There is something else. What that is and how that works, I don't exactly know. Why some people say that they, they go into buildings, or some buildings are said to be haunted, and so why don't those spirits move on to the next life? I don't understand that. I don't know. I touch on a lot of that in the book. I don't pretend to have understanding of those things, but the biggest thing I got out of my research and speaking to a lot of people was the comfort that there's so much more going on than what we understand, and we don't have to understand it. That's the other thing too. In this life, we don't have to understand it. It's enough to know that there is something else there, and we will find out in the fullness of our own life.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Brett Wright about reaching out to the dead. Thank you for supporting the program, keeping us on the air, and being a gravekeeper. Your support keeps this show on the air. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.